Who am I? I have no respect for justice. I maim without killing. I break hearts and ruin lives. I am cruel and malicious and gather strength with age. The more I am quoted, the more I am believed. I flourish at every level of society, and my victims are helpless. They can't protect themselves against me because I have no name and no face. To track me down is impossible. The harder you try, the more elusive I become. I am nobody's friend. Once I tarnish a reputation, it's never the same. I topple governments. I ruin marriages. I destroy careers and cause heartache and sleepless nights. I wreck churches and separate Christians. I spawn suspicion and generate grief. I make innocent people cry on their pillows. Even my name hisses. I am gossip. Back before the Pope was infallible, 1400 years ago, Pope Gregory the Great formed the common list of the seven deadly sins: pride, anger, indifference, envy, greed, lust, and gluttony. He didn't have gossip on the list, but I think it's as deadly as any of those that he did list. Maybe it should be called the eighth deadly sin. All sins of the tongue are deadly. All sins of the tongue are perennial issues because they're perpetual problems. But gossip is a particularly deadly sin. Gossip has destroyed more people, tarnished more reputations, broken more friendships, and split more churches than any sin that I'm aware of. Gossip is quickly told, quickly heard, quickly believed, and quickly spread. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 8, the statement is made that the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down into a man's inmost parts. There is a perverse fascination with gossip. It's attractive, and that's why the talk shows and the grocery store tabloids are just full of it. The dominant culture in our country just loves dirty laundry. It always has, and that's probably true around the world. Gossip is like a tasty morsel. What's that mean? It means gossip is like a hot fudge sundae made with Bluebell ice cream. That's what it means. Gossip is like peach cobbler with real whipped cream. Gossip is like steak and lobster. Gossip is like an all-you-can-eat buffet, and you can't get enough. When we listen to gossip, it goes to our inmost parts. It sinks its teeth into our hearts and souls and minds, and it corrupts us. The word for gossiper in Romans 1:29 is literally a whisperer, a person who whispers behind your back with the intention of hurting you. A gossip pours out his poison by whispering in our ears. And with telephones, of course, we don't even have to whisper behind people's backs. We can just badmouth them over the phone without them knowing. Gossip spews across the internet. In that passage in Romans 1:29 and 30, gossip and slander are linked together as sister sins. To slander means to speak evil of someone or something. The King James Version describes those who do this as backbiters in verse 30. Paul says these people are, get this, worthy of death. When we badmouth somebody, we bite them behind their back, hence the word backbite. And that's true whether the gossip is true or not. Many have the attitude that I'm not one to go around repeating gossip, so you better be careful you listen close the first time, and sort of make a joke out of it, but it's never been a joke with God. James 3:6 says the tongue is set on fire by hell. Satan is behind all gossip, directly or indirectly. A gossiper is the devil's mailman. Luke 6:45 says that the good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. And the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks. Our words reveal what is in our hearts. Gossip comes from the evil in our hearts. When we allow hurt and anger, when we allow bitterness and rage to live in our hearts, we entertain thoughts of hatred and retaliation and revenge, Ephesians 4:31. Gossip is one way that people use of venting anger, bitterness, and rage. We retaliate by shooting people in the back, but we use verbal bullets. There's no law of man against that, generally speaking. 1 Timothy 5:13 says that idleness can lead to gossip. It speaks of women in particular who get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house, becoming gossips and busybodies, saying what they ought not. People with too much time on their hands often become gossips. An idle mind really is the devil's workshop. Busybodies are aural peeping toms. They may not be looking in your windows, but they love to peep into other people's business. God places busybodies right among thieves and murderers in 1 Peter 4:15 because they steal information that doesn't belong to them and use that information to murder people's reputations. James 3:8 says the tongue is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Many years ago, I got a really bad case of food poisoning. I was sick for 3 days. And it was by far the sickest that I have ever been. I was so sick that it would make you sick if I described it. I was so sick, I thought I might die, and I was so sick that I didn't much care if I did. This was before we had any children. But I still remember the way that I felt. The tongue is full of snake venom. It's deadly. When I think of poisoning, I think of that time that I was sick and I know that I don't want any more of it. I know of a conversation that took place down on a riverbank in southern Missouri many years ago. Information passed from one person to another about a third party. And now, all these many years later, the person who received that information during that conversation thinks of that thing that they were told every time they see that third party. They don't know whether it's true or not, but they think of it all these decades later. They think of what they were told. They only have the hearsay, and it wasn't even from an eyewitness, but there's a cloud over that third party's reputation because of something said and remembered. The words of a gossip go to our innermost parts. They live on and on there. Now, gossip can be true, but it often contains lies or half-truths or assumptions or misunderstandings, aspersions, innuendos that have people connecting dots and developing conspiracy theories when there's really no connection between the dots. Proverbs 16:28 says, a gossip separates close friends. I've seen it happen. A gossip can ruin a friendship that took years to build. Proverbs 6:19 talks about the 7 sins that God hates, and one of them is sowing discord among brethren. So Matthew 18 says that if someone has offended you, go talk to that person alone, just you and that person. This is very difficult for us to do, isn't it? I don't know what part of go we don't understand, but it's very difficult to do this. Usually, the one who has offended is the last to hear about it. Jesus says, if it's that big a deal, if the offense was that big a deal, go talk with that person alone, just you and them, and ordinarily you can solve it on that level. And when the problem is solved, then you have gained your brother, he says. Proverbs 26, verse 20 says that where there is no wood, the fire goes out. That's obviously true physically. And it's true in this area as well. It also says, where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. I have found that to be true. In the same way that fuel is necessary for a fire, gossip is necessary for extended strife in a congregation generally. Anytime there's strife in a congregation, look for the ones who are running around gossiping. If you can stop the gossipers, you can stop a good percentage of the strife. I have learned this to be true. But it's complicated by the fact that very often the gossipers are a sizable percentage of the congregation, and they're on both sides of whatever the ostensible issue is. Paul was afraid that when he returned to Corinth, he would find whisperings and backbitings among them. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 20. And whisperings and backbitings are just exactly what we find among many congregations in our time. Gossip drives people away from the church. It causes our children to grow up and leave the Lord sometimes. It breaks up the spiritual family sometimes. It destroys the work of the Lord. Gossip may have done as much harm in the church as any other one thing that I can think of. We may feel flattered if a gossip chooses us to be their confidant, but remember, those who gossip to you will also gossip about you. Proverbs 20, verse 19 says, avoid a person who talks too much. And Ephesians 4, 29 says, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. You reap what you sow like a boomerang. It comes back. Gossip is a sin that many of us are far more likely to indulge in than many other sins. A lot of people in the church who wouldn't dream of getting drunk or fornicating are habitual gossips. When you're tempted to say something that might be questionable, ask yourself if it's edifying. Is this going to build somebody up? Is there any good reason to say it? Is this something that the other person needs to know? Do I have permission to say it? Will somebody be hurt by it? Will the Lord be glorified by it? Now, sometimes gossip passes under the guise of a prayer request. But if you don't have permission from that person to reveal personal information, don't be too specific when you ask requested prayers for them. Sometimes people ask for information so they can, quote, pray more intelligently, but you don't need to know everything in order to pray effectively for someone. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. It's often been pointed out that God gave us two lips and an upper and lower set of teeth to guard just one tongue. Once gossip gets out, it gets out of control. If I gossip to you, then it's out of my control. I don't have any control at all over what you'll do with it. Once gossip gets into people's ears, there's no way to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. You can apologize, but you can't take it back because you can't get it back. Careful with fire is good advice, we know. Careful with words is 10 times doubly so. Thoughts unexpressed will often fall back dead, but God himself can't kill them once they're said. How do we determine whether we're gossiping about somebody or whether we really are conveying information in an effort to help? This is a key issue. If you're a Christian, you love your brothers and sisters and you want to help. How do we watch out for our brethren productively without gossiping about or being critical of one another? It can be hard at times to nail gossip down and determine when you're doing it. Maybe when in doubt, we should just err on the side of silence. But leaders in the church in particular often have to deal with problems that affect the church, and to do this effectively, they have to discuss situations. They have to do that in order to arrive at wise and united solutions. They also must be careful not to discuss beyond a necessary circle of people some of these things. Sometimes it is necessary in the church to mark and avoid certain individuals and publicly identify them. The New Testament makes this clear so that others won't be harmed by their actions or their doctrines. That's obviously not gossip. It has to be done. But when we're talking about a situation where somebody who is neither part of the problem nor part of the solution is involved, then we may well be gossiping. I think intent is very important here when we talk about gossip. And if you want to know your real intent, you've got to be honest with yourself. If it's your business to deal with a problem and you're trying to get to the solution while involving as few people as necessary, then that need not be gossip. But I need to ask myself, honestly, am I saying things to harm or to help? Am I saying it to titillate, or am I saying it to arrive at a solution? What is my true motivation here? And when I have asked and answered that question honestly, then I'm getting toward whether I should say something or not. That can be tricky because we can become very accustomed to lying to ourselves about the answer to that question. No wonder the apostle says fairly frequently, "Let no man deceive himself." Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19, says that in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. That means that generally speaking, it's better not to talk than to talk. And I'm saying this to myself as much as to you because I tend to talk a lot. Once I get started, it's difficult for me to stop. Wise is the man who says what needs to be said, but not all that could be said. Most of us talk enough that we have a whole lot of opportunities to make mistakes. James says that we put bits in horses' mouths, we turn a ship with a rudder, but the tongue is a small part of the body and it makes great boasts. The tongue directs your life. If you want to know where you're going with your life, just look at what you say. If you want to know the direction your life is moving, look at the conversations you have and what their content is. Look at the words that come out of your mouth. We shape our words, and then our words shape us. This little tiny bit of muscle, this little slab covered with a mucous membrane in our mouth, can make you or break you. It can open doors for you. It can close doors to you. It can help other people, but it can hurt other people. And it does determine, according to the inspired James, it determines the direction of your life. Why? Because your tongue reveals your heart. All speech is a form of exhibitionism, and it's exhibiting what's in your heart. So listen to your words and be assured that God does. Listen to your words and look beneath them. If you gossip, first admit it to yourself and then ask yourself why you gossip. Why do I say things about people that are half-truths or that are aspersive innuendos that may leave a wrong or wrongly flavored impression? You know, experienced gossips know just exactly what to leave out of the conversation so innuendo can fester. They give you a selected set of facts and half-facts. And often, very often, people will gossip so that they themselves look morally superior to the person that they're talking to, superior to the person that they're talking about. People do it to put themselves in a better position in the eyes of others. We need to look beneath our words, and we need to ask, why am I doing this? Maybe there's an insecurity in my own life. And maybe to deal with that insecurity, I just need to realize that God loves me, and I don't need to make myself look better. I don't need to make myself look morally superior to somebody else in somebody else's eyes. I just need to mind my own business and live well in God's eyes. Often, when we're criticizing others, we're criticizing a weakness that we see in ourselves. If I'm proud, I tend to notice the pride in you. If I'm proud and I don't like that about myself, then I may criticize pride in everybody where I see it in them. If I'm proud, I can see it a mile away in another person, because that's what I don't like in myself. So I amplify it then in others. So if that's the case, I need to look beneath my words. What do I need to work through in my own life to get past my inclination to gossip? You know, we can take our tongues and just cut people down to subatomic particles. Or we can speak words of life, we can speak words of encouragement to everyone. And the question becomes, which one of these am I going to choose? Which one are you going to choose? We each have it in our power to do either one. But we need to realize how much God hates gossip, and then hate it that much ourselves. It's all too easy to laugh this whole thing off with a joke of one type or another and say, well, you know, I've always had a problem with talking out of turn. But we need to stop it if it's out of control. If you have been a gossip, it's time to repent, and it's time to develop a godly speech pattern that builds other people up and glorifies God. We each need to commit, whether we think we're a gossip or not, we each need to commit to guard our mouth and to ask for God's help in this. The tongue can be trained but never tamed. James makes this clear. It's like a tiger, a mean cat inside of us. It can be trained, but don't ever make the mistake of thinking you've got your tongue tamed. James says you don't. The tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. So we need God's help in the control. If your lips you'd keep from slips, five things observe with care. To whom you speak, of whom you speak, and how, and when, and where. Simple rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Jesus said in Matthew 12:36, that each of us will give account on the day of judgment for every idle word that we've spoken. Does that scare you? It does me. I've done a lot of talking. Every idle word we will give an account for. I can't even remember them all. And yet, I'll give an account. We need to pray Psalm 141, verse 3. Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips. We need to pray with David, who was a man after God's own heart, what he said in Psalm 19, verse 14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in my sight, in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. We'll leave that lesson with you as we stand and sing the invitation song.